You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Welcome back, episode 30 of the Rex Chapman Show with super cool Josh Hopkins.
That's me.
My guy. My yeah. guy. You've been away for a bit. I'm so happy to have you back. And our
happy to be back.
Our listeners don't know because we haven't said anything, but your father passed away. And I wanted to talk for a second about your father, Larry Hopkins. Served in the military. Congressman in Kentucky for years, one of the sweetest men ever, one of the kindest, and one of the most fun people ever. And I know it's been a rough month or so, and I just want to tell you I love you, and I'm happy that you're back.
I thank you, Rex. You have been very supportive. I really appreciate you. It has been tough. You know, it's a rite of passage, I guess, for all of us, but it doesn't make it any easier. He and I were really close, and I miss him. And that's a wake up.
Fun man, a fun man. And I would like for you to tell, because you'll tell it better, just one little anecdote that's one of my favorites about your dad picking you guys up from school. And you're riding in the car, listening to a song from the 80s.
Oh, I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, please.
I mean, this is just it's so small, but something that just the way he would tease without people knowing. Like, I'd have friends in the car, and it was Cool and the Gang playing. And I loved Cool and the Gang. And I was like, this is so cool. I'm cool. And he was like, oh, is this Cool in the Bunch? And I was like, Dad, it's Cool and the Gang. And every time they played, is this Cool in the Bunch? Took me, I was so young and dumb, took me years to realize he was taking the piss out of me. But yeah, he was a,
oh, it was so good.
Smart,
such a fun man.
Funny, great guy. I'm just very lucky that he was my father, and I appreciate all your support.
Yeah, love you, buddy. Okay, so I'm going to guess you've been pretty busy. Have you had a chance to read anything? Book club? Let's do book club.
I did actually. Look at this right here. Just holding up. I use this to hold up my microphone. So book club, actually. So I have this Barack Obama book, and I haven't read it, but I have it.
Oh,
so okay. I don't really have anything for. I haven't read anything really. But yeah. What about you? You got anything?
No,
for this?
I really don't. Holiday season, all of that. Yeah. Been kind of busy. Really, just haven't. Haven't had a chance to do anything. Like, I don't even have time to tweet.
Oh, yeah, you don't?
Yeah, no, can't find the time.
Hmm.
So that
seems like if between every show, if I've read all your tweets, then I should say I've read the,
well,
the, this week's book by
informed.
Rex Chapman.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Technically.
On channel.
Josh, this is episode 30. 30. The Bernard King episode.
The Curries.
Billy Owens, one of my former teammates.
The orange. Yeah.
Hey, bro, let's get into this.
Ken Griffey Jr. The Reds, you know.
Very nice.
Closest team to us.
Very nice. We've got a great guest today, and I want to get into it. We'll get into it a little bit more on the other side, but one of the best analysts in basketball. Works for the Phoenix Suns still and been their analyst for the last decade or more, and was an all-time NBA player. Most points scored by any bench player, almost 20,000 points. We got Eddie Johnson, jump shot Eddie Johnson. So let's get right into it. Ready?
Yes, sir.
Edward Arnett Jr. Is it Arnett or Arnett?
Arnett. It's Arnett. Arnett.
That's what we thought.
But I'm not a junior, so just go with the
John. I mean, Edward Arnett Johnson.
Edward yeah, Arnett now, hold up. See, I kept that middle name secret for years, right? But I finally, it's almost like this, right? Like, you know, when you're young, you're like kind of shy about saying certain things. Like, like, you know, a lot of people were shy about telling somebody they loved them, right? I mean, you know, some people were. And so you have to work your way through that. Now I tell everybody I love them, right? People like us, it was hard for us to stand in front of a crowd and talk. Yeah. And so I finally just said, you know what? I'm just an open book now, man. I want to leave everything behind. So Arnett, yeah.
Arnett, yeah, I love it. I love it. I'm Everett, so I get it. I had the all same right. thing. I'd be like, they'd be like, what's your middle name? First, they're like, is it Rex or is it Rextifer? Or I'm like, no, it's Rex. And then they say, what's your middle name? I go, Everett. And they'd say, Everett? Everett? What is that? So I feel you. How you doing, man?
I'm good, man. You know, I got my Twitter back on. That's like my lifeline. I didn't know that, but
yeah.
Other than that, my family's great. I'm great.
So you got hacked recently?
Yeah.
Dumb. Yeah, I've always wondered how that happens. How?
Because I was dumb. I'll give you a combination of two things. I was dumb and I was greedy. How about that?
Okay.
You know, and I like when I go and talk to companies and all that, I always tell them just be happy what you have, leave something behind because you can't take anything with you. And I got, you know, somebody got in touch with me in my DM and they said, hey, man, you know, I think you would be a good influencer for my product. I'd like to send you shoes. You just take a picture of them and just, you know, post them and that's all. I'm like, yeah, no big deal. Cause I don't go buy shoes anymore.
Right,
right. I got shoes free when I played. I can't get them free. I'm not buying them. So same. I'm like, cool. So next thing I know, I pushed the buttons, I signed in to the website and everything, and just bam, total control of my Twitter went away. And I knew it immediately. I knew.
But did you go and try and tweet, and it just didn't work?
No, it basically my Twitter was up. Alongside, you know, I had two windows up. And as soon as I did it, it just took it.
I'll be damned. And so what happened from there?
Immediately it changed my email, so I couldn't go in there. I went straight to settings to see if I can jump them before they changed the email. And as soon as I got that, the email was changed.
Oh, my God.
And once the email is changed, then you can't go in. You know, and reset it. You can't reset your password. And back then at that time, I just immediately went to, you know, help through Twitter and just told them what just happened. And it took a couple of days for them to get it done and got it mixed up with me and the other Eddie Johnson, as a lot of people still do.
Oh,
if you peruse the internet, you'll find it still. You know, and I made a lot of money. I've sued a lot of people and they paid up too. And I just tell people, keep making that mistake. I got a lawyer that likes money. And every time you make that mistake, he's going to be knocking at your door. And over the last 10 to 12 years, at least 13 to 14 entities had to pay up.
We were just talking about this, Eddie, before you came on. And you know what I didn't know? I didn't know this was Frankie's brother.
Yeah. Yeah, Frankie's brother. Yeah.
I didn't know this.
Yeah. We got to explain this a little bit to people listening. Yeah. They don't know. There was Eddie Johnson, yeah. NBA player.
Yeah. No.
And
yes,
I played against him. Yes. I played against him. Yeah. Very good player. And I was in Hawaii and on a family vacation. And I landed back in Phoenix.
4 or 5 years retired, Eddie.
I was, at this point. A couple of years retired.
Yeah.
And my phone was just blowing up. And I ignored it at first. I was like, you know, I'm back in town. I'm not paying attention to the phone, but it kept blowing up. And I finally looked and people was like, you okay? What's wrong? I mean, what happened? I mean, I'm like, what are they talking about? And then Mike Woodson, who's, you know, one of my best friends in the world, head coach of University of Indiana, called me up, hysterical. Like, what is going on? What? Where are you? I just landed back from Hawaii. He said, yeah, I figured that. Turn on the radio. And I turn on the radio, and I go to, I think Skip Bayless is filling in for, forgot the guy's name, Jim Rome. Mm-hmm. And as soon as I turn the radio on, he's destroying him. Like,
oh my,
I can't believe the Suns hired him. I can't believe he was like, he's a pedophile. Because that's what the Eddie Johnson got to get arrested for.
Right.
I cannot believe that. And, you know, he is worse. I mean, just he went all in on me. And I'm saying to myself, if you read the article, which I then went to, it says Eddie Johnson, University of Auburn, 6'2". So if anybody knows me, I'm not 6'2".
Yeah.
I didn't go to Auburn, went to Illinois. And he just went all in. And then from there, the Chicago Tribune, who I just did an article for, I'm from the University of Illinois. Mm-hmm. It was a very pleasant, positive article they wrote on me. Some junior person in a back room in a cubicle, all of a sudden didn't read the article. And so then he changed it from Eddie Johnson, University of Auburn, to Eddie Johnson, University of Illinois. That's the Chicago Tribune.
I'll be damned.
And then, so, you know, if you're a newspaper, you're going to jump on it, then you're going to see the Tribune wrote it. And so it just was all over. And then it had gotten to a point, I think, where, you know, CNN got it and a lot of TV people got it. And then Fox, I'd heard, they were ready to run a story. They had, like, did all their research on me, and they were about ready to go, like, break it.
Oh, my God.
Good for them, they did. Good for them, they did.
Good for them, they did.
I'd have a nice piece of Fox right now. So,
man, I'm so sorry, man.
Now, you know, just look, brutal. Man, you know, things happen. I mean, the only thing I was worried about at the time was just, you know, like, do I need to go get my friend Smith and my other friend Weston? Because I didn't know.
Crazy people.
Right.
I didn't know, you know, because I was, my website got over 1 million hits in an hour. So, you know, I mean, that, you know, so that it was, yeah, it was weird. But, you know, like, again, I got through it. Well, you know, a lot of entities, you know, gave out apologies and they did all that along with a check.
Yeah. You know what, though, Eddie? kudos to you, though. I mean, sitting here talking about this and your perspective on it, just like we talked earlier about getting hacked, you immediately looked inward and said, and my greed got me hacked. You know, it's just a beautiful perspective. Eddie, I'm so excited to talk to you today. I was telling the guys before you came on that, you know, you came into the league in 1981. Uh-huh. And by the time I came in, it was 88. But you were also, you know, in college 4 years.
Yeah.
You know, so you guys were considerably older than I was, as I was the youngest player. And I just remember it being such a, I told him, I said, Eddie was an absolute motherfucker to play. And really, you taught, I remember several things. I remember learning things, you know, as we go. I remember just, you know, not that you guys were telling me, but just from the experience of playing against you, you probably weren't considered a great defender.
Right.
But after nor was I. But after playing against you, I remember going in after the game, and it looked like a werewolf had scratched me all up. But from that, I learned right away, hey, this is different. You got to hold and grab in this league. And if you don't do that, you're not going to survive.
Yeah.
But those were hard lumps to take. But I definitely remember learning that directly from you early on in my career. And I also think people don't understand just, you know, how good you were, you know, never make an all-star team. That's the other thing. I see guys, and I don't want to, there have been guys in recent years make all-star teams. Mm-hmm. That I go back and I'm like, that guy is an all-star when Eddie Johnson never made an all-star team.
Yeah.
Do you do the same?
Oh yeah. And just to really go back on your on like, you know, Rex, look, we all could play D, but they're judging us against other guys that's in the league. Right. And just like you and I could play O, and we were better than a lot of them guys that tried to play O. Right. So what they do is always try to find a reason to keep you where you are. You know, and I took pride in trying to defend, but honestly, man, most of my energy was exhausted on offense because when I was on the court, that was my job description.
Yeah, yeah.
But I always paid attention to detail. I interviewed Vernon Maxwell the other day, and he said on the show, he said, "Hey, I hated you." I'm like, "Why?" Yeah. You know, he said, "Man, because you always hit me." And I said, "But, you know, I wasn't known as a defender, Vernon." He's like, "Please." I mean, like, I would hit people. I was stronger than guys that I guarded. And
you were big. You were 6'7", man. I mean, that people don't understand.
Yeah. And so they want, like, you're right, Rex. They don't want to just say, "Well, you could score, but you couldn't defend." And I remember playing against Larry Bird my second year. He was always talking so much trash to me. And he taught me how to trash talk. I mean, Larry Bird basically taught me how to trash talk. And so there's one game in Boston, he just worked me over, man. Like, I went out for the jump ball, and it was my second game of my career, and Cotton Fitzsimmons started. And I'm scared to death already, you know, not just a Bird, but, you know, I played against Mikael in college, so he was cool. But Robert Parrish, I mean, Dennis Johnson, I'm looking at all these dudes, man, and I'm intimidated. I had played against Danny Ainge in college. Mm-hmm. So, but Bird walks out at the jump, and the veterans on my team said, "Eddie, just don't pay attention to him." Fine. So I minded my own business on the jump, and he walks out, and he just stands next to me, and he leans over, and he looks at me. And I didn't really pay him any attention. He said, "Do you honestly think you're going to guard me?" Curse that. Like, what? I just didn't say nothing. Then he stands up and he looks over at our bench and he looks at Kyle. "You all think this rookie going to guard me? Man, I'm going to bust you up just right in my ear." And I'm just looking forward. I'm like, and so by that time, all the guys on the floor is just cracking up, even my teammates. So I'm like, "Would this official please throw this ball up?" So the official couldn't throw the ball up because there was something going on the side. So then finally he walks around, stands in front of me. He said, "I'm going to tell you something right now. I'm going to wear your ass out." And then I looked at him. I said, "I'm here. Don't worry about it." I said, "You ain't intimidating nobody." I said, "I'm from Chicago. Where you from?" He started laughing. Game starts. And he's just wearing me out, okay? And I'm trying to go back at him. I'm shooting bricks. And in the fourth quarter he was in, it was late. Game was kind of close. And he came down. He said, "You talking all that junk. I bet you can't do this." And he raises up from Steph Curry range. And he shoots an air ball. And I look at him. He's like, "That don't matter. It's the fact that I can do it and stay in the game. I bet you can't." I'm like, okay. So that stuck with me. Yeah. Later on that year, I had it rolling. I was playing better. Comes to Kansas City. Starts on me again. Like, okay. And so that time, I'm going at it. And one time, I said, "I'm going to get it." I said, "I'm so tired of his mouth." So I drive, I give him an up fake, he goes for it, and I come up and I catch him right in his mouth. And I laid it in for an and one, and they called a foul on him. So we're on the free throw line, and he says to me, "That's all you can do is score. You can't defend anybody." I said, "I can do one other thing, though." "What's that?" "I can make you bleed." Because his mouth was bleeding. He didn't like that. So after the game, I'm in there getting dressed and everything, you know, and he walks into our locker room. And he knew Jerry Reynolds. So that was his reason to walk into the locker room.
Ice, right?
Yeah. No. Jerry Reynolds, the coach.
Oh, the coach.
In Sacramento. Coach. Yeah.
Gotcha.
And so he walks in and I'm sitting there and I'm like, oh. And because I had total respect for him. Still do. One of my favorite players ever. Love him to death. He taught me so much. But he walks over to me. And I'm like, is this fool going to try to fight me in here? Because I'm ready to go. I ain't running for nobody. And he looks at me. And he reaches into his pocket. And he pulls out his keys. You know, back in the day, you know, they didn't have a key card. They had the big room keys, big right? Keys.
Yep.
He tosses me his room key. Why don't you come by the hotel? You and I can finish it alone. And we'll see who can make somebody bleed. I started laughing. I said, yeah, right. I said, I have your little bitch, you know what, screaming. And he said, no, let's do it. I'm like, please. I said, Mikhail and Paris can probably be around the corner ready to help. And when I said that, he started laughing. And he looked at me and said, you know what, I like you. And he left.
That's so great.
That's great.
That is fucking great.
See the best guitar you ever played against?
And after that, believe it or not, he never trash talked.
Wow.
It's so great.
He never
trash talked. It's so great.
He brought out of me what I was holding in. And every time I saw him after that, I thanked him. That's it.
Man.
You taught me a lot when I first got in the league.
So great. I remember, Eddie, I remember stepping out on the floor with him the first time, and I didn't like him. Like, I was a Dr. J Magic kind of guy, and I just didn't like him. Everybody else liked him, so I guess I wasn't going to like him. I stepped out on the floor, and, like, I'm 6'4", you're 6'7".
Uh-huh.
You're 6'7", he's 6'9 or 10. And big as a doorway. You know, people don't understand how big that man was and just how skilled, right?
Yeah.
Insane. The Rex Chapman Show, powered by Basketball News, is sponsored by Prize Picks. Prize Picks is the easy way to play daily fantasy. It's daily fantasy simplified. Did you know that, Josh?
I didn't. I like simplified, and I like fantasy, and I like daily. Go on, Rex.
It's just you versus the projected numbers, Josh. You can pick from 2 up to 5 players and an over-under on their projected stats for a single game and win up to 10 times on any entry. Prize Picks is safe and offers fast withdrawals, Josh.
I like the sound of this. I like the sound of this.
You like where it's going. Well, Prize Picks allows mixed sports entries, offering every sport you can think of, NBA, college basketball, the NFL, soccer, MMA, and more, but not Pinochle. Did you know that? They don't offer Pinochle.
Wow, they should get on that.
Your Prize Picks entries can be made in 60 seconds or less. It's that easy, Josh. You can take the over on Joel Embiid's rebounds combined with the under on Alex Ovechkin's point total if you want. So cool, right?
That's pretty cool.
Dig it. You can receive a match on your deposits up to $100 using our exclusive promo code NEWS. That's promo code NEWS for an instant 100% deposit match on up to $100. Guess what else? What? Prize Picks has an award-winning, easy-to-use mobile app available in the App Store and Google Play.
Sweet.
How important growing up was it playing sports for kids like you and Isaiah Thomas, Mark McGuire, in the housing projects in Chicago? Yeah.
Oh, man. Now, look, that's how you survive. You know, you had to do two things. One, you had to really work your way into working out and going to play because you always had to navigate the game back in the day, living up in the city. And you had to develop a reputation that, you know, you were not going to get involved in what they were doing. And the only way to do that was really show a commitment to your sport and just stay by yourself. And for me growing up, I had obviously older brothers that looked out for me. And unfortunately, they were in gangs and they were able to keep guys off of me. And Isaiah had brothers and his mom was no piece of work. Well, she didn't play. And Mark McGuire the same way. And I grew up in Cabrini Green. And then we moved to the west side of Chicago, and that's where, you know, Isaiah and Mark were. So we had interactions, but we didn't know anything about each other growing up. But
and there was no AAU really, right?
No AAU.
No, you could, no. Yeah.
My AAU was right across the street, a high school called Austin High School. I would go over there, and that was like my domain. Go over there and play, regardless if it was snow, rain, whatever. We'd play. And I remember one day, one of the guys that played up there, he said, and this is about my junior year of high school. So by that time, I'm like, you know, all state, like top player in Illinois and all of that. And he said, I got somebody that'll beat you. And I'm like, yeah, okay. I said, bring him. I would take on all comers. And so he brings him up to the court. And he's about, I don't know, 6 feet, 5'11", maybe 5'11" at the time. And we go one-on-one. And you know how you messing around with Rex at first, like, yeah, you know, play around with you. And I did the same thing later in life with Steph. And I want to tell you about that story. But,
okay.
But yeah, so we start playing, and he blows past me, lays it up. Like, all right, little kid can play. You know, nice move, little kid. He looked at me. Like, okay. Then he goes and he gives me a step back, pulls back, and he hits a bucket. And I'm like, before I got like woke up, the kid, he was up 6-0. I'm like, okay, So I stop him, you know, and I'm scoring. Now he's like a maybe 6-3. And then he gets the ball back, works me. Now, we played a game of 12. All of a sudden, he had 9. Now, by this time, I'm trying to play. And I'm like, okay. And his uncle over there talking junk. So I went to the old man stuff. Start backing him down. Gangstered him, just dunking on him, gangstered him, right? And so it was like 11 all, and it was game point. And I had the ball. And I'm like, I'm not giving him this ball back. So I just totally gassed him. Just backed him down, hit him, knocked him out the way, laid it in. And he looked at me. He didn't like it either, right? And I'm like, my uncle comes over like, yeah, he scared you, didn't he? You know, that's going to be one of the greatest players ever. And I'm like, yeah, okay, yeah, he can play, without a doubt. You know, I got my own ego then. You know, I'm like, hey, yeah. I'm going to be one of the greatest.
Of course.
It was Isaiah Thomas. It was Isaiah. To this day, he brings it up.
Isn't that amazing, though, Eddie, that you know, because we played against, you know, the best of the best. And I'm sure, you know, it's hard to see it from our perspective. I'm sure we're the best players for a lot of guys that, you know, faced up against us growing up. But when we see somebody that is actually better than us at some point, you as a player, you never can accept it. Like, I couldn't accept that Michael was better, you know, when you're going against him, playing against him every night. Later on, you realize, well, he was Michael Jordan. Okay.
Yeah.
Right. But it's just fascinating when you see somebody that can bust you up if he's trying and you're trying, it's eye opening.
You know. Right? You know, I mean, it's like your kids getting to you, like, you know, like my son could never beat me. Then eventually, you know, I couldn't beat him, you know, and I retired. Right. He's kicking my butt. And yeah, but just to go back and finish what you brought up, Mark McGuire. Yeah. So Isaiah went to St. Joseph. Mark went to the school that we were playing at, Austin High School, and I was at Westinghouse High School. And we played against Mark his junior year in the playoffs. He had gave us like 40. You know, we beat him, but just going against him, I was like, this dude's ridiculous.
Big ass and hands, right?
Just he had everything, hands. Right? I mean, what we saw with Mark McGuire in the NBA, he was doing this in high school.
Damn.
And so definitely he would have been a one and done guy if guys were doing that back in the day. Mm-hmm. And so straight from high school, not one and done, straight from high school. But then he decided, because they couldn't beat anybody, he's really the only one. So he transferred to Westinghouse. So he and I played together for a year.
Damn.
We were 29-0. We lost the championship game.
Oh.
In the city. Because we didn't have a point guard.
It still hurts, right?
We didn't have a point guard, man. They trapped us the entire game. Every time we got it across half court, we scored. I was like 12 for 13. Mark was like 13 for 14. But they stole the ball about 15 times. So our point guard just couldn't get the ball up the court. And one of the biggest upsets ever in Chicago playoff history. But I was on a team, if you all remember, the Paul game teams, obviously, with Mark Skip Dillon,
Ty Corbin,
Bernard Randolph. We were all high school teammates. Well, Ty was from South Carolina.
I was, okay, yeah.
But Skip Dillon and Bernard Randolph, we were all on the same high school team.
Gosh, damn.
Yeah, so it's, and then, you know, Mark and I just battled, obviously, in the pros and Isaiah as well, but we were all very good friends.
Amazing. Amazing. Hey, when did you realize that you were, you said by the time you were a junior, you're probably the best player in the state. When did you realize that you were, as a kid, that, I'm good at this. I'm better than, everybody in my grade and I can play up. When was that? And I know for me.
Good, go ahead, I'm sorry.
I know for me, like, I felt good, because I could do something, a little bit better than everyone else. That gave me some pride. So I'm just wondering for you, when did you realize, oh shit, I'm good?
End of my freshman year in high school, I basically almost got cut my freshman year. They only kept me because my brother had just left Austin High School. He's one of the top players in the state, and he had just went to Texas A&M on a scholarship. And so that's why Westinghouse held on to me, because they like, this kid could develop. I was gang.
How big were you? How big were you?
I was probably freshman, maybe 6'2". But I was obviously, I'm 6'8 and a half, I got to my type. So I was just still clumsy and gangly. And I just, guys were knocking me around. I wasn't really that big. I was about 170 pounds. And so he almost cut me. And so he said, what? I'm going to give you a chance. I'm going to keep you. And so you just need to work. And I just worked. I just worked. The first 12 games of Farsoft. I mean, I took off so fast, man. It was ridiculous.
Really?
I was by the 20th game, Farsoft, I was on varsity. I went from almost getting cut, and I was on varsity playing in the playoffs. And then the next year, that's when I started making all city. And I went from averaging eight points early to 15 and then to 28 and averaging 15 rebounds in the span of 4 or 5 months. It just was literally crazy, but things open up for you. And even then, though, I didn't think NBA wasn't totally on my radar, Rex, when I went to Illinois. I had a great career. I just felt like when I got to my late junior year of college, that's when I said, okay, I got a chance. But up until then, and it worked out well for me because it made me focus on other things that I had to balance it with. And that's making sure I got my degree, setting it up for the future and what I wanted to do. I started to focus on all those things, working in a law firm. I was basically pretty much accepted to go to Illinois Law School. So it was I was ready. If I did not make it, I was going somewhere else. And so, when I went to Kansas City, and then I saw I can compete with them guys, then law school went out the window.
Man, it's just so – I didn't know that. But it just speaks to, because and I never thought about it. I was just going to play basketball, and that's what I was going to do forever. Never thought about doing anything else. And in our league, most of the guys are pretty much that way.
Yeah.
That perspective.
I was scared, man.
At 22, that's amazing.
I was scared, man. I knew that I had to take care of my mother some way, man. Wow. And, she raised 7 kids virtually by herself. So I knew that I was that ticket. And I was going to be that ticket in a legal way.
Yeah.
Not an illegal way, but a legal way. And then that was my mission.
How do you keep that, you know, focus early? I mean, you said Cabrini Green. I mean, that's notorious as one of the toughest places to grow up of all time. How do you keep that focus when all that is around you?
It was extremely tough. Again, the balance of my brothers protecting me. They were game bangers, so they told guys to leave me alone. And, you know, it's just my mom just kept the reins on me. You know, and I think when they see you always on the court shooting, they tend to start to not bother you. I mean, I was accosted growing up by gangs, got beat up by gangs, threatened me, telling me I better show up to meetings. You know, I got robbed at gunpoint maybe 5 or 6 times in my life by gangbangers, shot at. But then, you know, I realized that in order to stay away from that stuff, I always got to be where I need to be. And so what I would do, like for me, high school, I went to one party in high school. That's it. I didn't see daylight. I didn't see daylight for 4 years of high school in the school year. I did not see daylight. We had practice at 7 a.m. We go to school, and we're going home at 6, dark. I got time to do my homework, get up, repeat it. So I went to my high school prom. That was the only thing I went to. And I took that to the University of Illinois. Didn't go out, didn't hang out, kept to myself. And so along the way, Rex, you know this, the way I survived is I just dropped people that didn't want to climb that ladder with me. You know, I didn't bring friends with me like a lot of these guys who come to the league, they're bringing guys with them. I didn't have anybody to bring. I had like 2 friends left, you know, because they weren't climbing that ladder. They didn't want to do what I wanted to do. And I used to go back to the neighborhood and say hi to them, and they still right in the same neighborhood. You know, so that was just my thought process.
I'm glad that's beautifully said, because I think it'll give people a window. And I was saying this right before you came on. When you laced up to play against Eddie Johnson, you better bring your lunch pail, because he's all business. And that's what you were. Now, you know, we played against guys who, you know, they're gonna maybe take 8 or 9 shots tonight.
Right.
Get there a little something. No, you were out there to do your job, and that was to put it in the basket.
Yeah.
It was to compete. And I just knew as an opponent that when I was I better be up on how well you're playing, how well you're shooting it, what kind of rhythm is he in? Because if you weren't ready, it was going to be a long night, and you were all business. And I always respected the shit out of that.
I remember telling you something, and that, I don't know if it was after a game or you were like over in street clothes, but I remember giving you some advice. You probably don't remember it, but it had to do with something that you could not stay away from as an athlete on the floor. You would always
I think I remember. Did you tell me I got a pump fake?
Well, not even that. I told you stop jumping so high on your shot.
Yeah, probably.
Because you were spraining your ankle. And I said, you don't, man, you don't need to jump that high. I said, the only reason I told you is because early in my career, I did the same thing. Because, you know, guys would block your shot. They'd be great athletically. So you have to force, and you're young too. So you would force yourself to jump higher than you normally do. And I just said, just be careful, man, because when you jump that high, guys get up under you. You're coming down a little bit heavier. Like, I would jump like this high, and I would go down on people's feet, but I'm not coming down with a lot of weight. And so I could get out of it. And I remember, I think you wore like low cuts or something. You didn't wear
I tried to for a while.
Yeah, and it's like, I used to watch you, and I was like, if I ever got the chance to tell them, because I learned, Rex, from guys in front of me. It's like, you know, I know we get on people, to these kids today, where we say, man, y'all love each other too much. Y'all, you know, but it's not their fault totally. They grew up in AAU and that brought them together. But we communicated too. People just didn't see it.
Right.
And we always, like for me, like, I got so tired of Kiki Vandeweghe and Purvis Short working me over. Like, I told my assistant coach, Frank Hamblin, who, you know, he's passed away. You know, Frank Hamblin, assistant coach for Cotton for many years, and Phil Jackson won championships. I said, Frank, man, what am I not doing that they're doing to me? And he said, it's their footwork. And he said, you know, I got to get you. And I said, well, where are they working this? How did he say he knew? And I said, you got to get me in this camp, man.
The big like, man's camp.
I mean, yeah, man, you got to get me in this camp. And so my second year, they got me in. I called and begged Pete Newell to let me in. He was hesitant to let me in. And he said, you got to work hard to get in, young man. I'll be the first one there, last one to leave. Mm-hmm. And I got there, and they treated me like a rookie in that camp. So Akeem was there. I mean, there's all kind of guys were there, right?
Yeah.
So Rodney McCray, you know, and Purvis, and obviously Kiki and the poster boys. And we just go at it like 3 hours a day, one-on-one, just one-on-one footwork, 3 hours, twice a day, like for 7 days.
Was and it in Hawaii?
LA. LA. It was in LA, UCLA. And they just embarrassing me, working me over. And I'm just watching them and learning. And I averaged 9 points a game after my rookie year. When I went back the second year, averaged almost 20. And I remember Kiki and Purvis like, yeah, you got it now, don't you? You know? But they had no issue with it. You know, it's like, you know, good. You know, good for you.
So good.
Kiki and I are great friends to this day. Purvis as well, man. They're the reason why I propelled myself in the NBA. Those two dudes. Those are two dudes that I battled with.
Yep.
You know, and so, yeah. So, you know, we had a closeness. And so I took what they did and I would talk to guys like yourself. I talked to Malik Sealy. One time, man, Malik Sealy's, I think, rookie year, I beat him up so bad in the preseason game. I must have been in a bad mood or something. I don't know. But I was just throwing him all over the court. And like, what you gonna do? What you gonna do, rookie? And he didn't say a word to me. And I could see I was affecting him.
Yeah.
And so it was like, okay, I backed down a little bit. And then after the game, I went up to him. I said, Malik. And obviously Malik is not here. Tragic accident. But I said, Malik, look, don't ever let another veteran do to you what I did. I said, this is preseason. I said, don't do that, man. Don't back down. And he looked at me, and I think he's kind of emotional. He's like, okay, cool. All right. It was like he was just giving me too much respect.
Right.
You know, I had made a name for myself, and I'm playing. And I said, no, bro. It ain't about that, man. And so, yeah. So, you know, you give guys advice.
It's so great. It is so great. I mean, because, you know, when you boil it down, people don't understand. It's one thing to play if you're good. It's one, you know, growing up, it's one thing to play against guys a couple grades older than you, maybe even three, maybe even four. But all of a sudden, you're 20 and you're playing against guys that are 30 and 35 that have been doing this job for years, a job that you're still just learning. You don't even, you're not very, not even adequately really qualified
yet. Right.
I mean, so I so many of you guys helped me along. Eddie, we could talk about you all day. I want you to come back and talk some more, but we got to talk about the Suns.
Right.
Got to talk about the Suns for a little bit and the league and what's going on right now. What's been the biggest, you know, in the last 3 years, what's been the biggest, two or three of the biggest things that have contributed to where the franchise was in Phoenix and where it is today?
Well, obviously, you know, 10 years, 10 straight years since the Steve Nash era, it basically been in the basement. We didn't make the playoffs, struggled, made a lot of player changes, coaching changes, just couldn't get stable. And I think the best thing to happen, and I understand familiarity is important. Getting somebody that's had championship experience is important. And I think hiring James Jones, a player that wasn't a household name, but he was a household name at the end of the bench.
Yeah.
In the minutes that he got, And then when he was sitting down there, you know, Rex, he wasn't that guy down there complaining.
Yep.
Making it worse. He was a guy down there encouraging. And that leadership principle, I think, really helped him. I got familiar with James when he played for the Suns, and I was impressed with him and how he carried himself. And then going out and hiring Monty. That right there, man. Monty has failures at other places. Obviously, he went through a travesty and losing, you know, his wife and family members. And so it was very difficult for him, and he had to go through the rigors of everything. And he came here balanced as well. And so now you got culture, you got understanding, you got championship pedigree, you know how to do it. You've been around very talented, great people like James Jones, Pat Riley, you know, being around him, you know, Spoelstra, watching him grow, playing with great players, LeBron, and you got Monty being around Popovich. So they knew. They had a blueprint, and they knew what to do. And the year prior to Chris Paul, they had gotten Ricky Rubio. And Ricky Rubio really was the first one to change the mindset because he got Devin Booker to play more without the ball and to trust his teammates and trust him that he'll still get Devin his 20 shots, but he's going to make sure all these other guys get there. Took that responsibility away from him. And in doing that, it really enhanced Devin. And it really made him see that's the key to winning. And going 8-0 in the bubble, and the Cotton used to always say this. Cotton used to say, look, if you finish a season in a good note, it will carry over to the next season. A lot of people don't understand that because it's five months in between. But that's not true. Because if you finish well at the end of a season, it's going to propel you to go out and work on your game more in the offseason because you're leaving on a good note. And then you're going to show up to training camp a better player. And so that's what they did. They went 8-0 in the bubble, almost made the playoffs, and then they went home and they worked on their game. And they came back last year, and with the addition, obviously, of Chris Paul, he took us to another level. And the drafting of Cam Johnson, Mikal Bridges, DeAndre Ayton, picking up Cam Haynes of the world, Dario Saric, all those guys, man, just propelled us last year, you know. And then this year, obviously, just the additions we've made, it's just carried over. We lost a tough finals, without a doubt. And they didn't complain. Like, Chris Paul was playing with one arm. People didn't know that. Devin Booker pulled his hamstring after game two. People didn't know he's playing on one leg. And yet they still almost pulled a game or two out. And so they showed up this year, man, saying, you know what, we know why we lost. And we're going to prove it this year. Right now, they're sitting with the best record. It's a joy to watch them play. They just play the game the right way. Not many teams can get beat up like they did the other night in Toronto on the offensive glass and still win the game. Yeah. But that's this team, man. They find a way to win. And right now, they're the best clutch team in the game.
You're a shooter. Real quickly, how long till Devin Booker was in there, just got drafted and comes in. How long till the organization, the people realize, oh, we have a star, you know, we just got better than even we thought we got. We got somebody to build around. How long did it take till people were like, oh, he's real?
As soon as he started playing.
Right off.
That's what I recognize. And Jeff Hornacek, you know, wasn't playing him a ton. Was trying to take him along that rookie road, which I agreed with. But you could see when he was out there, you could see the tenacity he had, professionalism. He's a real deal, man. I mean, like, he's a committed dude. After he scored, I think he broke one of my records in Mexico, where I think the record for the Suns was like 25 and a quarter, something like that. Well, he broke it. And he came in because we played two games. He sat next to me and he looked at me. He called me Jump Shot. He said, Jump Shot, what's going on? I'm like, good. He said, yeah, I got that record. I'm like, yeah, you did. But I got another one you won't get. Right? And he looked at me. And I said, oh, by the way, Tom Chambers got one that you won't get either. So yeah, you broke my record, but you, a couple of them you're not gonna get. They just looked at me and just okay, and walked away. Right. A couple of weeks later, we're in Boston. He gets like he got like 35 at halftime. Like, no, I think, you know, I think he had maybe 30. It could have been, it was in the 30s. And so I'm doing the telecast. Everybody like, uh-oh, he gonna get Tom Chambers' record, right? And I'm like, I think it's about 28, guys. I think it's about 28, because here's, because this is how the story plays out. And so I said on the telecast, well, he won't get my record, because he got to get 43 and a half.
God damn, Eddie.
Well, he got it in the half. So in one game, he broke Tom's at 60, and he got me at 43. And while it was going on, he would walk past me, and he'd look at me. And I look at him, I say, you got 50. Okay. Came back later. You got 60. He said, I ain't done. And he went and got set.
70.
I'm just telling you, man, he's maniacal, man. He's got he idolizes Kobe. He's he got a lot of Michael in him too.
Yeah.
I mean, he really
and his
does.
Dad played. His dad played, Melvin played. But, you know, I'll piggyback on that for a second. I hadn't seen Devin. I knew nothing of him. I was this was in 2000. I think it was 14. Would he have been? Josh is a Kentucky guy. We're Kentucky, big Kentucky people. Devin's freshman year was what year, Josh? 14, 15, right? The year we try to not talk about. They got beat in the finals. 15. Yeah. So I was down at Rupp Arena and the team was warming up. And I went down and sat by Kenny Payne on the bench. This is an hour before the game. So we're just sitting out there and we're watching guys. And I didn't know they had the Harrison twins on the team that were sophomores. Uh-huh. And they had Devin. And I'd watched Devin practice one day. And then I watched him out there, you know, going through some drills up and down the floor. And he just glided up and down. And I said, what about this kid? Because he was kind of an afterthought at that point.
Right.
And I said to Kenny, I said, what about him? I kind of like him. He said, yeah, if we're really good this season, he won't be around very long. So he knew. He said, you know, because he was going to have to play. And the thing about it, he never complained once. Obviously, looking back, obviously he was better than those guys, the guys that he was playing behind. Yeah. He never complained. He's a good teammate. And I'm glad, really happy that people are starting to see just what a professional he is.
Then that's the key. He's just a professional, man. His teammates love him. He's very respective of everybody. He just, you know, he's a class act, man.
Yeah.
He knows how I feel about him. I mean, he's one of my favorite players, just in how he carries himself. And just his maniacal attitude, man. Like, right now, I mean, look, he's not playing like he should. But, you know, it's a long season. He had a long season last year. And so he knows he's not shooting the ball as well as he knows he will. I know he's, you know, in a sense, you know, as a veteran, he's learning how to cruise a little bit now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And, you know, but when you cruise, sometimes it can backfire on you. And I think he's in that rhythm now. He's trying to find himself. But they're winning. And that's the beautiful part about it, guys. It's like, he knows he can take a shortcut now and still win.
Yeah.
And that's what all the great players could do. Like, Rex, you know this. Like, when you played the Bulls back in the day, like, people always want to say, well, you didn't ever want Michael guard you. And you know, he was all defense. I said, yeah, he was.
But yes,
I wanted him to guard me the first three quarters because he wouldn't guard me. He'd be chasing, trying to get
chasing, him, shooting the gap, trying to get
his
steals.
Numbers and all that. I said, the guy didn't want to guard me was Scott.
Yeah.
I said, all day long. Now in the fourth quarter, would Michael say, okay, now that's another difference. That's another argument then. But the first three quarters, please, I wanted Mike Gordon because he knew he wanted to go get his 35 too.
And he hated chasing screens. He was shooting the gap. He was cheating, you know. Yeah. And so, yes, you're exactly right. Exactly right.
Yeah, so but he learned how to navigate, and that's why they won. They won six titles because he knew and learned how to navigate, but still kept the persona that he's one of the greatest defenders ever, even though I'll give him 28 in the game. I'm like, oh, well, he just had a bad night. Oh, me and Rex let a guy score 30 on us. They just can't defend anybody.
Hey, does Devin have a nickname that's stuck yet? A real nickname? Because
D-Book is what I call him, but no.
I really like the diabolical. Like, that's okay. What you called him, diabolical.
Diabolical.
Yeah. The diabolical Devin Booker. Devin diabolical Booker. I like that. You're in the position to start that up. I like it.
I might bring it up. I might
throw that out there.
There you go. We'll
you have to be careful when you get guys' nickname because then their family is watching.
Yeah.
And their family doesn't like it. I don't like that.
Right.
You know.
Well, then it won't.
You have to be careful.
Yeah. Well, then they know if they don't like it, you can't say you don't like it because that's when it sticks.
That's right.
You just gotta roll with it and let it go. Because if you're like, I don't want to be called the Doughboy, boom, you're the Doughboy from then on out. So you got to be careful. Real quick, you told the story about Isaiah, and then you alluded to that you had another story with Steph, and I can't let you go without, you know, you dropped that out there. I'd love to hear it.
Yeah, I played with Charlotte in 94-95, and was it 94-95? Yeah, I think it was 94-95. It was. I went to Greece after I left Seattle. In 93.
Oh, right.
So I came back and then I'm dating myself. I got traded from Seattle to Charlotte. So I played there in 94-95 season. I went to Greece after Charlotte and then went to Indiana. But that one year in Charlotte was probably arguably, I've been on a lot of funny teams, but that was the funniest team I'd ever been on in my life. Dale Muggs, Scott Burrell, Larry Johnson, Lonzo Mourning, David Wingate, Frank Bukowski. I'm telling you guys, it was not one day where we were on the floor laughing. Very close team, guys really stuck together. And so we had young kids. So, you know, my son was a little bit younger, I think, than Steph. But, you know, both. So we go Dale's house. And then, you know, kids would be there. Kenny Gaddison, obviously, is on that team, very good friend. So our kids would be over there playing around everything. So Dale says, you know, why don't you go in the driveway and play Steph? I bet he can score on you. And I'm like, and I would see Steph down at the gym. He'd always be at the other end of the court practicing.
Yeah.
I mean, he always was in the gym. Like, if he wasn't in school, he was in the gym watching us practice. And so I'm like, please. So we go out to the driveway. And so I give him the ball. And just like Isaiah Thomas, he drains one from like 20 feet. So he's up. We played a game of like 8, you know. So he drains one. He drains another one. You know, I get the ball, lay up, messing around with him. You know, he's not that strong, so.
Yeah.
And then he goes back out, and he takes it to the street, okay? And he starts making. So now, game like 8, he got 7. So I got like 5. I'm like, I ain't letting this dude beat me. Went to the old man stuff again. Like, nah, I went to the old man stuff, right? But I said, and he was ticked off.
Oh yeah.
I said, no one is ever going to allow you to beat them. They're going to go to their arsenal like you went to yours. So just know that. He was ticked. He walked off. He was mad. He was really mad. And so I reminded him of that, like in the finals, because I'm always at the finals and stuff, interviewing and stuff. And I remember he remembered it. The first year I told him about it, he remembered. And he just started laughing. But I walked away and I remember telling Dale, that's ridiculous. I said, I'm in the NBA now, man. I'm like 34 years old, 33 years old. I said, that's ridiculous what he just did.
I know.
And then laugh. And Seth was out there, and Seth was a little younger, so he wasn't strong. So, you know, but you see how good he is now. But when then after that, man, I would see him in the gym practicing. And I just try to tell these people, and I call it in Rex, though, I call people that get on my nerves, I call them stoops. Okay. When they get stupid, I don't say stupid, I call them stoops. And they want to go back at me and stuff because I heard what Bob Ryan said. I wish Bob Ryan would have explained it more thoroughly because I know what he meant, that Steph is not good for the game in that sense because he's perfection. Think of somebody that's perfection in regards to how they shoot that three. Right? I mean, it's hard to reach that level. Like, they've been trying to reach the level of Magic Johnson forever. They drafted 6'8" guys, 6'9" guys, put them at point. He got some guys that were decent, but nobody's ever duplicated Magic. Yeah. Nobody's ever duplicated Bird. They try to act like Doncic duplicated Bird clips. No, it's not. Okay. They try to they never duplicated Kareem. All right. The Skyhook. Okay. Nobody, I don't think, is going to come in the league like LeBron. At those 6'8", run and jump like he does, command a game like he does. That ain't happening. There might be somebody that can run and jump at 6'8", like Zion, but Zion's not taking care of himself like LeBron. Okay, so nobody's going to perfect LeBron. And so, and even though Kobe came close to MJ, he didn't perfect MJ. You know, so when you try to perfect perfection, it's tough. And you got a lot of guys that's out there trying to copy Steph. Trae Young's back down.
Yeah.
They thought Trae Young, he's back this game down because you can't duplicate that dude. And so why are you chasing him? Because a lot of times you're not going to look good. Just like they tried to duplicate the way Golden State plays.
Yeah.
Holy, first you got to get three of the best shooters in the history of the damn game on your team to play that way. You can't be like Houston chucking up 27 damn threes. No, you okay? I mean, look. Reggie Theus was a good-looking dude when he played. Okay, like Reggie walk in a room and the girls is like, Reggie. All right, Reggie used to wear the leather outfits and everything, even enhance his good looks. Right. All right, there's a lot of guys start buying leather. They still didn't look like Reggie. I mean, give me a break.
Point taken.
I mean,
point
taken. So that's what Bob Ryan was trying to say. That's perfection, man. I mean, like, we'll never see another dude shoot threes like him, man, with people climbing all over him, man.
Off the dribble.
He's making that jump.
Off the dribble.
Yeah.
Off the dribble, Eddie. Amazing.
People look at it as a negative. But no, I group him with all the greats I just told you about.
Yeah.
You know, like, you can't duplicate that. I talk to Rick Barry all the time. Eddie, they need to do this. I say, Rick, nobody's ever going to be able to do that like you, man.
Yeah.
It just won't happen.
Yeah.
Like, you all are special. Hold on to that unique thing that you have. And so that's how I view Steph. But he's amazing.
Fantastic. Eddie, we're going to have to let you go here in a second. The Suns are going to win it this year. If the Suns don't win it, who wins it? Who's the best team? Or who's the best team in the East?
Milwaukee. Okay. And I would say Brooklyn, guys. But you, to me, and this is just my opinion, anything half-assed, you fail.
Yeah.
I was brought up like that, and I'm not going to change. If you're going to half-ass and have a part-time player, you're going to fit.
Yeah.
You got to be all in. You got to be in the foxhole with me, man. If you're not in the foxhole with me, if you're not, look, you're willing to get on an airplane and fly, Who says that damn airplane's not going down? You're willing to put ink on your body. You're willing to do a lot of things that could put your life in jeopardy. Okay? And so for that, if you're not all in and you're not playing, and you're just showing up half the time, I just see problems happen. I see guys on the bench mad because, oh, I've had a good game at home and now I don't play on the road. You got to get through all that manure, man, that just normally as a basketball player, you don't have to deal with. You just go ball. If you're healthy, you go ball.
Yeah.
And so for Brooklyn, man, that's what I see happening, man. I don't foresee them being able to navigate this. They tried it last year. It didn't work. Milwaukee beat them. And I think Milwaukee will beat them again. And they better hope Philadelphia doesn't find anybody for Simmons that they can put to Embiid next to him. And so that's who I'm picking, Milwaukee again.
All right.
And then it'll be Golden State and the Suns. I mean, I have hope for the Lakers, man. But after watching last night again, I just
– Well, Eddie, what's your take? I want to touch on that real quick. What's your take on AD right now at this stage of his career?
I think AD, when Charles and I, when I went to Houston into my career, and Charles was on that team with Dream and Clyde. I told Charles and Kevin, and Kevin Willis told him as well. And I put Mario Elliott in that group because he had won a couple of titles. I said, Charles, they already got this. I said, we have to push them. And you don't have to push Dream and Clyde that hard. Anthony Davis, he act like he's good. He got a title. He good. He, like, that's why it's so hard to win multiple championships. And those guys talk about that, like three-peating and all that. You got to have a maniacal attitude to push your body to lengths that you don't want it to go to. And I don't think Anthony Davis, after they won that title, Anthony Davis has not been Anthony Davis. He had a bad year last year, statistically. His free throw percentage went down from the 80s and the 70s, and it's all because of concentration and toughness. Like, he doesn't want to get hurt. He wants to go through the motions and just survive.
The one thing that I noticed, Eddie, you make a great point, is that Anthony, and we're Kentucky guys. We ride with Anthony.
Right.
The thing that I've seen the most over the last 2 years is he's a one effort. He's turned into a one effort guy. He wants to shoot the jump shot. Yeah. Used to be if he'll shoot it, go get it, and his second and third efforts have sort of vanished. And you know, like I know as a player, a lot of times when you're doing that, you're not in the best shape you can be in. And so that's what I wonder with him at this point. It's inarguable. He's a great basketball player.
I've said this on my show.
And they've got to have him healthy.
Rex, I've said this on my show. I would tell AD to his face, because again, as I told you earlier, I always give guys advice. I don't sugarcoat it. I never did as a player. But I had a balance of it all. I love Anthony Davis. I like his character, his Same. Off the court. I can tell that he loves his teammates, okay? I think he and Dwight Howard got into it because he's protecting a teammate.
Right.
I get all of that. But, man, he's the word around the league right now is you can punk him.
Yeah.
And when the word around the league, when it travels like that,
yeah,
you're seeing guys trying to punk him. You're seeing guys like, hit him, go at him, not be intimidated by him anymore. And you can lose that power, man. You know, and I think that's what I see. I just think, you know, he was a ferocious guy for that year they won the title. But that ferociousness is gone. And for a lot of reasons, obviously, that he only knows. But that's why I don't give the Lakers much of a chance. Everybody want to blame Russ. You can go ahead and blame Russ. He doesn't look good. I get it. But Frank Vogel keeps putting him in the game like he did at the end of the game last night. And he, why did he do that? You know, so blame goes around on that team. I'm happy to see it. Trust me. I love LeBron. He's my favorite player, without a doubt. I ride and die with that dude. I think in my estimation, I never give anybody the GOAT when they still playing. But like I said, stay tuned when he retires.
Strong words. I love it. Eddie, favorite movie ever?
Oh man, gee, that's a tough one, man. Shawshank Redemption is up there. Training Day is up there. Scarface is up there. A Fish Called Wanda is up there.
Yes, sir. Oh. Yes, sir.
Oh man, that is so many.
That's good. That's good.
That's great. That's good. That's good.
But anytime about, Scarface on, I'll watch that.
If you could have dinner with anybody, dead or alive, who would that be?
Martin Luther King for me.
Okay.
Fantastic.
Yeah, nine-year-old kid when he died, I was standing at Cabrini Green watching tanks roll through our neighborhood and people crying. Yeah.
Man.
So,
man.
Yeah.
Front row center concert for anybody, front row center, dead or alive, like a concert.
A combination concert of Prince and Michael Jackson. Yes,
okay. There we go.
Okay. I'd like to come to that, please. If you work that out, I'd like an invite.
Yeah.
Eddie, thanks, man. We're going to let you go. Thanks for taking the time, bro.
Hey, guys, my pleasure.
Stay
man.
Safe
you know,
out there.
Hey, Rex, you know, anytime, my man.
That's awesome. Man, you can tell, man, these guys, he just loves you, loves respect you, yeah, love to play, you know, me. Like, no.
Why wouldn't you love playing against me? I was 6'4", he's 6'7".
Yeah, scratched you up, too.
He did.
Scratched you all up.
He did. All right. Man, that was awesome, wasn't it?
Yeah, that was great. That was great.
I mean, Eddie, I couldn't you talk to him for the next 3 hours?
You know, I love to. Here he is employed by the Suns, and he has his – but he's not afraid to say his opinions. He's like, look, this is what I think. I'm going to say it. He's not like, better, you know, be a little judicial here. I don't know. He says it like he thinks it.
Eddie's top 3-4 in the league. That's why he's been doing this job with the Suns forever, because he's really good. I mean, and he takes it serious. What he was talking about being businesslike and having a plan, that's Eddie Johnson. I mean, yeah. You knew you were in for a night. You better work out there or Eddie's going to get 30, 35 and talk shit to you. You know? Just,
and that's how he approaches his broadcasting, his obviously. Like, yeah. He's business.
Yeah.
Like, his nickname so would fun. Be Eddie Business Johnson. Like, that's, you know? Maniacal Devin Booker. I like that.
I appreciate his openness. I mean, the whole stuff about being arrested. I remember when that happened.
Mistakenly arrested. Mistakenly. I mean, that can ruin your life. That...
Oh, yeah. And again, it's a good friend of ours, Frankie Johnson's brother. You know, Fast Eddie passed away, had notorious drug problems for a long time, in and out of jail. Had a lot of problems. And when Eddie Arnett Johnson, was arrested for, it was with a young girl. And
sexual assault on a minor.
On a minor.
I mean, I can't imagine.
They arrested him and took him to jail.
That's a bad look. Yeah.
He's an inspirational dude. I'm glad he came on today.
Yeah, me too.
All right, Josh. Well, back in the saddle. Hey, buddy.
Glad to be back.
Episode 31 next week. We'll be back. Same time, same bat channel on the Rex Chapman Show with super cool Josh Hawkins, powered by basketballnews.com.